Hello and welcome to the Mini Rap Cast. I just freaked out for a moment because I hit a button that I didn't remember if it was the right one or not, but it is, and we're all here. Welcome everybody to the Mini Rap Cast. My name is Jeremy. Joining me for the first time this year is Kerry Palmer.
It's me. I'm back.
And joining us for the very first time ever, very special guest, one Jam Walker. Hello, Jam. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Of course.
Thanks for coming.
I'm so glad to have you on. Just before we get into the intro, I just wanted to give Jam a quick intro. I messaged you yesterday to ask you how you wanted to be introduced. And so I'm going to read out exactly what I said to you, which is award-nominated freelance writer, Jam Walker. Jam, you have written for at least Games Hub, Kotaku Australia, Power Up, Biteside, Player 2, and Checkpoint. Where haven't you written for, Jam?
I have not written for enough places that will pay me for the job of freelancing that is my only real job right now. Let's say that.
Well, ain't that the hard truth.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much for coming on, Jam. Just before we get started, what's your, like, quick crash course into your history with games and games writing and getting into all of that fun stuff?
Oh, boy. So, okay. My first gaming systems were a Sega Mega Drive and a Game Boy. And I still have my Mega Drive plugged in on my old TV just down there because I regularly still play NBA Jam. As for like games media, I dabbled a little bit through like friends websites in like early 2000s. None of that's on the internet anymore, and thank goodness for that. And then really came back to it. I decided as I was turning 30 several years ago that I should, you know, do something and try studying something. So I did a 2-year advanced diploma at RMIT in digital media, and then segued that into the games degree at RMIT. And in the last semester of my final year, I applied for the inaugural Games Hub Wordplay Games Media Mentorship Program, and I was announced the winner, which was horrific timing because it was literally the final weeks of my final year of uni, but it worked out great. Yeah, and I got paired with Alice Clark as a mentor, who's, you know, everyone knows Alice.
Yes, incredible.
Yes, absolutely amazing. And I'm just kind of, she was supposed to mentor me for a couple of sessions, and she still is almost every day. I guess we're actually friends now. I can say that. And I've just tried to push it as far as I can, and it's been great.
Awesome. Cool. That's so cool. I remember that was the first time I think I saw your writing was when you were part of the Games Hub Writers Program. I think 2-3 years ago now.
It was 2.5 years ago or something.
So it's great to have you on the show. I'm glad to hear that your Sega Mega Drive is still connected to the wall and still kicking. Was there one or two games that you had like as you were sort of getting into like thinking about games a little bit more critically than just the average consumer that made you go, oh, this one's got me thinking in a way that like another hasn't in the past?
Well, the funny thing was, I don't think it was so much that. It was that I bought video game magazines as a kid, as a primary school kid, even obsessively.
Yeah.
Like even literally from maybe 8 or 9 or 10 years old, didn't realize it at the time, but I do now looking back on it. I think I was more into video game discourse on the schoolyard and stuff than I was games themselves. Not that I didn't love games, but I loved playing stuff so I could talk about stuff and reading stuff so I could talk about stuff. And yeah, and I'm sure one day, hopefully, I can actually be published in Hyper Magazine. That'll happen, and you can't tell me otherwise.
and now are you able to say otherwise? Is Hyper still going?
No.
Oh.
Also, I think in its final couple of years, it was like one person, pretty much.
Yeah. unfortunately familiar story these days.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, I'll get into the intro so we can start talking about some actual video games. For those of you who don't know, welcome to the Minirapcast. It's a podcast about video games. The Minirapcast is a fortnightly video podcast that goes live every Thursday evenings, aside from today, because I have some technical issues that I need to fix. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you tell your friends and give the show a positive rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. It makes a huge difference, and it only takes a few seconds. If you want to get notified every time a new episode is released, make sure to follow us on social media. We are at MinimapAU on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and also Twitch, where the Minirapcast goes live usually every second Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. Melbourne time. Minirap also wants to thank Shook for letting us use the Moog Model D Improv as the music for the Minirapcast. You can listen to more of Shook's music at shook.bandcamp.com. And finally, Minirap is completely independent and funded almost entirely out of our own pocket. To help keep the mics and lights on, you can support us by becoming a patron. For only $5 a month, you can know that you are indeed supporting the show, and you will also gain access to some of our special bonus features, like when Kerry and I took a few trips down memory lane and watching old E3 coverage from yesteryear. Head on over to patreon.com/minirapau to help us out. And remember, it's cheaper than a latte with oat milk. I tried to get one delivered today because the cafe around the corner closes about the right time of me wanting one. So I looked online for like early dinner of like, what can I buy early dinner, get that delivered, and just also get a coffee roped into it. And a place tried to charge me $11 for a latte with oat milk.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's too much money.
So, was it at least a large?
Yeah, but like, it was like, I think it was like $10 for a regular. It was fucked. Ooh. Anyway, so it is now the middle of March almost, which is just a horrendous thing for me to say out loud.
Oh, man.
I'm so sorry. I'm so, so sorry.
But I feel like Christmas was 2 weeks ago.
I know, yeah. Right? But that does mean that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has been out for at least as many days as we are into March. And as of today, I finished it. As of a little while ago, Kerry, you finished it. Jam, you said you had finished it, but did you play Rebirth at all, or were you just a bit more familiar with the previous ones?
No, so the funny thing is I went from the Mega Drive, the aforementioned Mega Drive, to the N64 and didn't own a PlayStation until I bought one in a UK charity shop for, I think, £10 about 5 years ago.
Please tell me it came with a memory card with a bunch of random saves that someone had donated.
No, it came with some like really random sports games, and then a couple of days later found a like pristine copy of Metal Gear Solid for £1.
Oh, that's a great find.
It was so pristine it had a demo disc for this weird upcoming game in it called Silent Hill.
Oh, I've not heard of that one.
Yeah. Awesome. And just amazing. But yeah, I didn't grow up a PlayStation kid at that point. I played a little bit of Final Fantasy VII. I got 2020 as we were all having nothing else to do, although I was studying at the time. I decided, right, it's finally time to play FF7, and I bought it on the PlayStation digital store. Got maybe 15 hours into it and got distracted by something else. And then finally, coming up a couple of months later, got diagnosed with ADHD.
Wow.
But that was the old version that doesn't have like the ability to speed up time. Yeah. So once I learned about that version, I'm like, oh, I should buy that version instead. It'll be easier to get through. And I still haven't.
Yeah.
So that is my Final Fantasy VII experience.
Nice. Well, the good and bad news is that Rebirth throws like a fair amount of a lot of that stuff completely out of the window. So it's like it's mostly the same, aside from the parts where it's very, very much not. So, Kerry, you've had the most time with the game in terms of like in terms of raw hours, but also time since you finished it and been able to digest it. How is it?
How is this game? Well, for context as well, on my end, when we got Remake in 2020, I wrote a review for that game. It was the first game I wrote a review for, and it was partly because like we got it early in Australia, and I was like, oh, this will be good for the site, and it ended up putting it out a week after the game came out anyway, because I'd never written a review before. But it's been on the top of my list for like basically one of my favorite games of the last 10 years, if not ever. And I don't think it's necessarily the best, but And especially considering playing Rebirth these last few weeks, I think more and more I'm realizing that Remake was something of a moment in time for me as well. You know, working at EB Games, but during the very early weeks and months of the pandemic, so we were still working plenty, but then like had nothing else to do, just coming home and playing and getting so absorbed and so sucked in. I had very high hopes for Rebirth, and I would say for the vast majority of what they set out for, they meet and or exceed those hopes in a lot of ways. Unfortunately, as a lot of people have said online, I tend to agree with this take. The ending is it's a pretty big fumble.
Yeah.
And it's not enough for me to go like, screw this, I'm not gonna do the next one. Like, I'm like, okay, like we'll see what happens next. But looking at the excitement I had finishing Remake in 2020 compared to the excitement I have finishing Rebirth this weekend just passed, it's night and day difference. Yeah. Unfortunately, I really wanted them to harness that sort of fervor that they stirred up with their hints at trying to shake up what happened in the previous version of the game, and maybe it'll be different, but maybe it won't be, and this character's alive and they were dead last time, and oh, what's gonna happen? And it's all a bit milquetoast in that regard by the end.
Yeah, like I messaged you just as I rolled credits, and I think the three messages I sent you is like, I rolled credits, and then I just sent you ha 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 ha, and then I sent, what a mess. It's I'm still definitely digesting the ending of it, but like I'd started to sort of put together how I was feeling about the game overall over a while, because it's like I beat it, like I didn't shotgun it, but I got through it relatively quickly. I didn't fuck around with a lot of side stuff, and it still took me like over 60 hours. I know you had 100 hours by the time you hit credits, Kerry, and like I know you did a lot and you were also working
which
on
is
it,
like it's but it's that's still a much. Lot
yeah like that's
too much.
That's a long time for the middle of Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah. Yes, go on.
And like it like the what I liken this the most to is like I liken it to like the following seasons of Lost. I liken this to overall the feeling I have for the I guess Star Wars trilogies that aren't the original, which is like, okay, you've definitely made the first one and then immediately started writing where the story was going to go the moment you finished the previous one, without a whole lot of like planning or without like a tremendous amount of like intense drive to get to the next part. Or even just like even other shows, like I'm concerned about the TV show Severance, because there's been a lot of time in between the ending of the first season and the production issues that's going on the second season, that I feel like it's going to be another one of those shows, kind of like even Westworld, where like they had this really strong first season, like, ooh, I wonder where it's going to go. And then the second season comes through and it's like, oh, almost everything interesting that you were doing at the first one has sort of not been the interesting part of this. And it feels a bit wonky and a little bit unsure of itself. A lot of the parts of the first game that I found very interesting were the meta narrative of the game, bending what you know about Final Fantasy VII and like in the story, rejecting a lot of what your understanding of what this remake is going to be, and it like with its meta story, including the concept of Final Fantasy VII happening in the past, and then they announce all those other Final Fantasy VII projects all like sort of coming out over the next few years. They put together like a Marvel phase for Final Fantasy VII lineup, which was a bizarre thing for them to do. And as they lean further into what I thought was quite interesting of Remake, for them to do that, it has become the part of Rebirth that I think is tripping over itself and tripping over the main thrust of what made Final Fantasy VII such an interesting story, which is, you know, Cloud's relationship to Sephiroth, the his past, Aerith and Cloud's like dynamic. A lot of that stuff seems to be like blocked by this weird meta narrative stuff, that the emotional like corner that the final act of this game rests on falls almost completely flat for me. Mm. Which is a shame, because it's like the highs of this game are really quite cool. The cutscene direction is dope. It looks really good. It sounds great. It plays pretty good for the most part, aside from some of the worst mini games I've experienced in a AAA game. Like, I shat on like part of Spider-Man 2 for making some really high fidelity mini games that I hated. This like goes all the way over the edge with some of that stuff that I don't know why they've actually put some of them in there, because they are some of the most unfun things I've done. Which is, yeah, again, because the rest of it is really dope. It's such a bizarre, uneven video game.
Yeah.
And it's so much of a video game too. There's so much game in there. There's too much game in there. You can't handle that much video game.
I 100% agree. I think it is too much. And I can't help but when I look at this as part of this like second in a trilogy of remake trilogy project that is all based on one 30-hour video game, I can't help but look at that and think of the Hobbit movies and how they did their best to stitch it together and string it along. And like all of a sudden, like two painted images that you walked across as little polygon Cloud in 1997 becomes 2 hours in remake. And in Rebirth, it's like even more than that. It's even it's that same problem is sort of accentuated and doubled. That being said, I think the combat system is outstanding.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy the additions they added with this version of the game compared to Remake, all the different characters you can have, being able to swap them around, which you couldn't in the last one, how they all interact with each other, the very flashy cinematic limit breaks and synergy abilities where they team up together and do something incredibly exciting and bombastic. Like, then the strategy of it all as well. It's very strong in the gameplay. But yeah, there's so much.
Dude, suspect that this is a lot of these issues are like production scale and bloat, just like everything running away from them, or do you think it actually is much more of a deliberate kind of Kojima-esque better commentary on Final Fantasy and AAA game dev and stuff and remakes and everything and all that?
I think it's a bit of both, because it definitely leans into the thing that a lot of RPGs had from PlayStation, like the PlayStation 1 era, which is like a bunch of random weird stuff in the middle, like really like intentionally goofy kind of moments that in this get the AAA modern like treatment that make it a like, you know, a 8-minute cutscene with a little bit of walk and talk. I think that there's a little bit of misdirection, only in the sense that this game feels like it was made by a different director to the first game, which it was, because Nomura directed Remake 1 or Remake. And it wasn't Nomura who directed Rebirth. Nomura is still overseeing the entire Final Fantasy VII series, but it's not a game that's directed by him, I think, because he's also directing Kingdom Hearts 4 at the same time. So it definitely feels like it's got a little bit of a different voice. Not like it's completely disconnected from the first game, but there's been just like a touch revising.
Yeah.
And at the Dark Souls 2.
A little bit. Like, yeah. Maybe not quite that of a departure, but maybe a little bit more. I'm trying to think of an equivalent, but I'm having trouble.
Yeah. I am too. Because the thing is, it's like mechanically, graphically, it is more impressive in a lot of ways, and more engaging and more fun than I think Remake was, and it gets around some of the issues that Remake had by finally being able to open up like a Final Fantasy game does, being able to change your party around, which you couldn't do in the last game, which is like bizarre to not be able to do. But at the same time, because they were remaking such a small part with Remake and fleshing that out, they could only flesh it out so much. And I think they had so much material to work with here, and instead of restraining themselves, like, I've been thinking to myself, like, how would I have made this more streamlined over the last couple of weeks? And I would have cut entire open world sections. Like, they don't have a big open world per se, but like a string of sections that then, like, you go through like a narrow tunnel section that's quite linear, and then it's an absolute glut of things to do all of a sudden, like 14 hours.
I feel
hours
that way about most games.
Yeah, and that's fairly accurate. It's very it's very like, this is how it is for this one. With that each defined section, I would have cut two of those six open world sections, like, just wholesale, just gone. I the game's excellent. Like, it plays great, cool, whatever. Let's trim the fat a bit here. Let's just keep it a little. Just keep the momentum going a little bit. That restraint that they didn't really employ would have gone a long way.
Yeah. I wish they had more Queen's Blood, the card game that they've added, because holy hell, what a good card game they put in this one. I don't usually fall for that stuff, but man, this one was really good.
Yeah, it's Gwent levels of good.
They should put this on phones. Oh, wow. Yeah. If anything you can do in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Jam, you should at least try and play just a little bit of that.
Like Mia Card game. It's so bad.
It's really
the
good.
The only thing that wants me to sort of caution you from that is that, like, you get dribbled out like these clusters of like two or three matches every 5 to 10 hours, you know. So it's like, oh, when do I get to play the next bit? It's like after a lot.
Yeah. I'm talking if like you happen to be at someone's house and they've got a middle of the game save already there, and they've got some people there that like that aren't like doing the card game, then like, yeah, you could just jump in and be like, oh, this is good actually. It's really fun. I know that you're a little bit more prone to this carry than I am, but I think I'm not going to maybe go back to this game ever. Not because I didn't like it, but just because there's so much of it that is so uneven that it's quite an unappealing game to consider ever returning to, I think, for me.
Yeah. There's also a problem because of this pacing and how much I've expanded on it. There's a problem where, like, actually, in the plot, nothing happens for so long.
Because well, it's all second act, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Except, like, it's fully half of this game where, like, you know, some things happen. There's some character moments, but realistically, there's very large chunks of this game where plot-wise, nothing happens, and you look back and you're like, "What was it all for?" Oh, finally, we start having some reason to do stuff and some urgency and some like. I feel like it only really gets going at like chapter 9.
Yeah.
Which is so far into the game.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I'm inclined to go back to it in hard mode because I really loved the challenge of hard mode in Remake and platinuming the game. But the game's so big and unwieldy that like I'm not going to hold it against myself if I burn out and just let it go. So, we'll see. I'm definitely going to write down some thoughts on this though. Like it's been sitting in the tank percolating for 6 weeks at this point, and I'm ready to distill something. I think
you're gonna hate what I've considered writing. just in
something to do with Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, just in every way, shape, or form, this game is actually just Kingdom Hearts 2. Like every, like even at the end, like even in the last hour, I'm sitting there like, I've seen this before. I know this part. Does Rebirth interest you, Jam, as someone who hasn't like played Remake even?
Look, Final Fantasy, I've played most of 10. I finished, bizarrely enough, I platinumed 15. Again, I wasn't shocked when I got an ADHD diagnosis.
Yeah.
But that's kind of my experience with Final Fantasy, and I feel like it's this big missing piece for me. So 7 is what I really want to get to and start. Problem with being in our kind of gig is it's very hard to make time for games that aren't like work obligations.
Oh my God, right.
Let alone games that are gigantic JRPGs.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
No, I really want to.
I've always had the desire to go back and go through all three Final Fantasy 13s, but that's three whole RPGs that
I remember buying 13 when it came out, like right at launch. I put about 10 hours into it. I still did not understand what the hell a pulse fell C, whatever the hell it was. And I went,
good memory.
No, I went in here and I never went back to it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
The only reason I remember that is because it was very close to the brand of hard drive that I had at the time, which was LaCie. And I remember there's a neural like pathway that has been made when that game came out that I've not been able to break since then.
Permanently burned into into your brain.
I just remember so strongly all the discourse of, oh, it gets really good after 20 hours.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah. Yeah, once you finish the tutorial.
Yeah.
It's funny, I replayed 13. I played it yonks ago, but I replayed it, I think, last year. And it was as soon as I got to that open section 25 hours in that I ditched it. I really enjoyed the more linear stuff up until that point. And I'm like, I don't have time for this. Yeah. And then I dropped it.
Any final thoughts on Rebirth, Kerry?
It's a game I think I love it despite itself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The true Kingdom Hearts DNA. Cool, awesome. Well that's Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, our thoughts on that for now. I think you and I both have an idea of writing stuff for that, Kerry, but we'll see how we go. You two both just look to your right at the exact same time, but you two are not in the same room. That was like synchronized. I can't believe that.
There's a car in my driveway.
that was hilarious. Jam, you've been playing WWE 2K24.
I've been playing a lot of WWE 2K24.
How's that going? I know you're really into wrestling, right?
I am. I don't watch a ton of it each week anymore because I don't have time, and a lot of WWE's weekly shows aren't very good. 2K24. Look, it's probably the best 2K game so far. But last year's was probably the best so far, and the one before was probably the best so far before that. Cool. And if you haven't been tuned in, 2K22 was a big like reboot and reinvention after 2K20 was a colossal catastrophe.
Yes,
that's right. I was trying to remember which one was the very public misstep.
Yeah, well, 2K20, the series had always been made by a team called Yuke's since the 90s, a team called Yuke's in Japan, and then suddenly they switched to being made by Visual Concepts, the NBA 2K folks in California. And that happened about 8 months out from WWE 2K20's release date.
Right.
So that game was made in a not fun circumstance, I'm sure. And then they took a couple of years off and put in the work to make it good again. And it is. But it's very much the last couple of years have sort of just felt like, yeah, it's great. But last year's was great. And last year's was great. And it's like, there's a couple of new features and there's a roster update. But even a roster update is like not necessarily a good thing because you'll inevitably have lost people that you really like who are no longer with WWE.
Yeah.
So what makes them really weird games to kind of review and or recommend. Because obviously the diehards with any annualized sports game are going to buy them day one anyway.
Yeah.
And there's some little things that are truly fantastic, like WWE have always used, the 2K games have always used generic referees, and this year they actually have the likenesses of their real referees, which is fantastic, because it also means those people get represented and get paid. Some stuff like their gacha card game thing all these sports games have called My Faction got a lot of flack last year for, there were some really cool, like, unique character skins, but you couldn't use them outside of My Faction. Now you can. Wow. Now they're like all modes wide. Another thing too, like one of those skins last year was a John Cena action figure skin. It was literally the John Cena Elite figure action figure.
That's amazing.
And it looked amazing. Yeah, he moved like an action figure too. It was so fantastic.
That's so cool.
Commentators talk about like his expression's a little stiff tonight, isn't it, Cole? It was so good. The only way to get it was to buy an Elite Series action figure from Walmart and scan the receipt.
Oh,
it was the only way. And it was locked to that My Faction mode. So you can get that skin for free in 2K24 for all modes day one, okay. Using a little like locker card thing. So there's a lot of stuff where it's like, hey, they clearly looked at the community over the last year and did the work, and that's great. It just comes down to like, again, it's a $99.95 for quality of life changes, some good improvements, and like this year's story mode. Well, you know, there's the WWE retrospective, whatever focus thing, and then there's like the story mode, which is like your creator wrestler for male and female story modes, which are pretty much the same thereabouts every year. But this year it's 40 years of WrestleMania, is like the showcase mode with a lot of like, you know, archival footage, and you basically recreate matches as they happened. And even that is a bit weird because like, well, this is the 40th year of WrestleMania, so it's timely. But they've spoken out about this, how they didn't want to repeat matches necessarily that they've done in previous games, which means the choices they made are a bit odd. Like, there's nothing from WrestleMania 1, which is odd.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but also, of course, like, they don't have necessarily have the likeness rights to every wrestler who was around in the 80s and 90s, many of which are now dead.
Yes.
So that limited them further, I guess. It's just, it's strange. So yeah, it's WWE 2K. There's good, there's bad, there's same as it ever was, there's, yeah.
Did this one come out, this would have come out after Vince is no longer involved? Is he in this?
He's not a playable character.
Okay.
Like he has been in previous years. There's no cards for him in the My Faction mode.
Uh-huh.
In WrestleMania footage, his face is blurred, which is the first. Similarly, I mean, one of the most iconic WrestleMania matches of all time is like Brock Lesnar ending The Undertaker's win streak.
Right.
And Brock Lesnar is in the showcase mode, but you can't use him outside of all those, like in normal gameplay.
Is he bad? Course, is he bad as well? I'm not.
Oh, familiar. He was caught up in the same controversy. Sorry. Gotcha.
Yeah. For those who don't know, there's a lot of intense sexual harassment that has happened.
You can actually read the legal paperwork, and I have, and I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
It's
alleged.
It's that bad.
Alleged.
Yes.
Yeah. But there's a lot out there.
Yeah, but all of this came to light about a month before that game was like due to release.
Yeah, I was going to say it was really close, but yeah, wow.
Yeah. We did there was a media session. The WWE 2K always do a media session about 2 weeks out from launch for like, it was like a big Zoom call. And I think probably because of that was going on, and also just like, it was amidst when like, it was that real period about a month ago or 3 or 4 weeks ago when we had like every day it was new mass layoffs.
That would have been January, right? That was really nasty then.
This was like mid-February.
Fair enough.
It just felt like last year the team were really excited, and it was mostly the same people this year, and it just sort of felt a bit funereal this year.
Yeah.
From all corners, including the media. I don't envy those people who do that, those games, because they have to make them in a year.
Yeah.
To the whims of a license holder.
Yeah.
I actually, last year with 2K23 with that media call, the one question I asked was, what's it like working with such a moving target as WWE, where, you know, suddenly Monday Night Raw comes around and, oh, this guy isn't carrying this name anymore. He has a different name and a completely different character. Like, it could be anything. The entire look of shows can change week on week.
Mm-hmm.
And their development lead just kind of let out the most awful... It's exhausting.
Yeah.
You got a 1,000-yard stare.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, like, mad respect to the 2K team, to anyone who makes annualized sports games, whether they turn out kind of well or not. It's got to be a hell gig, I'm sure.
Yeah, especially for them, especially right now. Like, I cannot imagine just the internal Slack conversations of just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. And WWE 2K is weird, too, because, like, wrestlers in that company who were in those games will often be very catty on Twitter about, like, why is my power level so low? Or, wow, my character model looks awful. Yeah. Or, like, why do I still have this awful, like, version of my character that was 6 months out of date, like, you know, when this game probably entered production. I was miserable about it publicly then, and blah, blah, blah. It's a whole thing.
Oh, yeah, that's wild. I remember I was quite heartened when they did take that time away and they came back in it did seem to really, like, they really took that time away to do something good with it based on public reception. But it's interesting because I think the natural inclination for me in my head after that moment was like, it'd be amazing to see what kind of changes they can make the next year and the next year. And of course, it's not too different to what happens with NBA 2K, for example, or FIFA, or which is not that anymore. I guess it's not surprising to see it fall into that well-worn groove, but maybe a little disappointing.
I can't help but think that, like, we might be at the plateau and next year might be kind of crying out for another kind of reinvention. But we'll see how we go. My favorite, actually, feature in the new one is, like, it's the dumbest thing and it's probably the smallest addition. In, like, the backstage area, which is, like, you can leave, like, backstage brawls, that map hasn't changed in multiple games, except now there's an elevator that works, but the best part is that you can use the vending machines to get a little water bottle and you can throw it. You can throw weapons at people. So you can just, like, knock someone down to the concrete, wander up to a vending machine, bottle, throw. And it's endlessly amusing.
Yep.
It's like a Hitman
does
level.
The tiniest bit of chip damage and it's so good.
Yeah, nice. just quick, is, like, there's, like, you can obviously create your own wrestlers throughout all that stuff, and you can do, like, you can have some fun with sliders. Have you seen any really in, like, oh my god, it's like the, like, Tony the Tiger from, like, from Frosties, or, like, have you seen any of those really intense, like, oh my god, that's just a character that I recognize from something that is not wrestling at all?
Well, I actually, funnily enough, follow at least one creator on Instagram who, like, their whole Instagram is just their insanely good character creations in WWE 2K. And it's all creating, like, here is Edge in his SummerSlam 2001 gear, and it looks perfect. Or here is blah, 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 person who died years ago. Or some people, the character creator is, like, absolutely incredible. People can make super realistic depictions of anyone. And that's really cool. Haven't seen anything, like, super off the wall. I saw a really creepy Master Chief someone had made.
Okay, cool.
They made the armor and everything is kind of, like, using weird decals on other clothing options and on skin. it's a bit unsettling the more you look at it.
I was gonna say fleshy Master Chief, but I didn't know if that was, but it sounds like that's exactly what.
Yeah.
Cool.
I haven't looked in a few days, but Maya and a character that I made for the female career mode, it limits you a bit in that with starting options, but I realized there was, like, a, like, huge black hat with, like, a nice sort of band around it and, like, kind of, like, old-timey 18th century or whatever, like, prison striped jumpsuit. And so I made a woman called the Slam Burglar who just wants to get in there and steal burgers.
Excellent. That's very good.
Yeah, so you can even just do fun, silly stuff.
Have
that. It's great.
Have you all been seeing that Dragon's Dogma 2 character creator and the shit that's come out of that? Because it is very exciting. It is very exciting.
Yeah, I have. I just a few highlights, but yeah, it's intense.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that game to come out and everybody to just make just like, oh, I recognize that, or like, oh, that's just a crime against God. Awesome. Cool.
Oh, it's been a lovely first evening with Dragon's Dogma. Now to start the game tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. any final thoughts on WWE 2K24, Jam?
It is a good wrestling game, but it's really going to be up to the individual whether you think it's worth the money or not, which I guess you could say about anything. It's a kind of a non-review, but it's like, annualized sports game, it's always going to be an incremental thing. It's great, but how much does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's like, it's good if you haven't bought it in 3 years, but if you bought it last year, then maybe hold off for another year or so, sort of.
Yeah.
Or the same thing with these sports games, right? Even just wait 6 months and it'll be 50% off.
Yeah, yeah. they do get cheaper really quick.
NBA 2K is coming to Game Pass or something, 2K24, the new one, and that's only, what, 4 months old, 5 months old?
Yeah, yeah. They don't hold their value for too long.
No.
Cool, awesome. Well, I'm going to throw it to a break, and then we'll be right back with some Balatro and a Star Wars minute. So we will be right back. Welcome back to the Minimapcast. We're still here. We've got a handful of games to go, two-ish games to go. First up, Kerry, you've been playing some Balatro, or is it Balatro? First of all, no one knows how to say it. No one knows how to pronounce the name of this game.
No one knows. I think it's a term from like Roman times or something like that, but it's a mystery. Like, no one knows.
I'm going to put it forward that every single video game as a rule should have like that Resident Evil thing where you press the button and it says like the title in a dramatic fashion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Balatro.
I love that. That sounds great.
Kingdom Hearts 3.5, 3.5/8 /2 days. How's Balatro?
Balatro is really good. So Balatro is something that was on my radar a long time ago, like half a year ago, because I watch a decent amount, not as much as I used to, but a decent amount of videos from Northern Lion. And he tried this little demo that came out like half a year ago for Balatro. And my partner Sam has been wanting to understand it a bit more when I'm watching or when I'm playing. So I went back to his first video yesterday just to see it. And it was distinctively a much more different game. Like, it was like, oh, you didn't have this entire slot mechanic, like that wasn't there, and the point system is entirely different, but you know, the foundation is still there. So I heard of it from then, and it's been slowly gathering more buzz in like the roguelike community and in like Northern Lions community, as they took that first one down and they revamped it and they put a new one out and put a new one out, and then it's been pleasantly surprising to see it reach such a fervor in the game space. But it coming out was the first time I got hands-on, and playing has been so rewarding and fun, even though I've already seen a bunch of hours of the game and continue to watch it every now and then on like a lunch break. I'll just throw it on like while I'm eating, I'll watch NL play. It's one of the best roguelikes I've played in a long time / maybe ever, and I'm really, really impressed with it, and I really enjoy my roguelikes, so you know, I'm not saying that without consideration. It's
high praise.
Yeah, exactly. I think what impresses me the most about it is how simple the premise is, but how well they've executed on being able to run with it as far as you can. If anyone's listening who's not familiar, Balatro is a card game roguelike, sort of a deck builder, but it's more about, it's a poker roguelike more than anything. You get dealt eight cards, you try and make poker hands like two pair or a full house or a straight or a flush or a pair or a high card, whatever. Each of those hands are worth a certain amount of points, and you're trying to get more points than like the minimum that you need for each level, and that number increases with each level. And then between rounds, you get joker cards that are these modifiers that then do things like, you know, each hand is one number times another number, and you'll find jokers that increase the first number by 100, and then all of a sudden your pair, which was 10 times 4, is now 100 times 4. Instead of earning 40 points, you're earning 400 or something like that. You can boost up what a three of a kind does, and that gives you more chips, or you can make it so that straights are easier to make, or you can make it so that every time you there are these planetarium cards, and they increase the level of your hands, like a two pair, to be worth more. And then you can get jokers that give you more of a bonus the more planet cards you use. So then not only are you increasing your planet card score points for your hands, but also your joker value is increasing the more planet card. And that's just like one version of one of the cards. Like, there's so many different jokers. They all interact in so many ways. Like, that aspect is really fun. It's also great that I haven't come across, like, a bung build. You know what I mean? Like, if I get stuck and I'm like, I just need something to boost my score, like, yesterday, or I'm dead this next round, and I get something, and all of a sudden I'm working towards a flush build when I hadn't been prior, that can work. Like, it can be fun. It can take me through to the end. Like, no matter how the run changes and no matter the modifiers I get, it feels like it's valid. It feels like there's an option there for me to take it to the end. Rather than me just looking for a particular four or five cards and being like, oh, thank God I'm saved, now I can win.
Is that option that you always feel like you have in your back pocket, is that and I know this is a card game, so this is going to sound very strange, like a card game. Is that a skill-based thing, or is that like a... it will kind of throw you a bone.
Don't get me wrong. There are times, because it is luck based, what you find in the shops. Like, sometimes you will just like strike out and you'll be out of luck and you'll play the next hand and it'll be over and you have to start the next run. That will happen. And I think it doesn't become a skill thing so much as a familiarity thing. Like, once you become familiar with what a certain card does, what other joker you might want to look out for, like, that obviously helps, rather than like you discovering everything as you go. That is a bit more difficult. But at the same time, they do a really good job of adding new stuff as you go. Like, the sense of progression is really good. I'm constantly finding new jokers each time I play, which can drastically change how I played my next session. It's not throwing you bones. No, it's more that, their systems, I think, are very well designed and balanced to be able to let you be that dynamic with your playstyle and with adapting to the circumstances of what you've been given or what you haven't been given and trying to make that work. It's very, very impressive. The sense of style it's got, the graphics and all the animations, like, it's just a card game, but it's got this awesome CRT aesthetic, and all the cards have this faint little wobble, almost parallax effect, but some of the jokers actually have some parallax effect, like some of the special ones. Like, they've got like a foil and like holographic like effect that can go on the cards, and that makes them worth more chips and stuff like that. Like, the game oozes style for how simple it is. It's great. It's got this awesome song. It's just one song that plays the whole time, but it changes the different instruments and the layers of what you're hearing pretty fundamentally with each different screen. Like, it's different when you're playing a hand, it's different when you're in the shop, when you're opening one of those planet cards, when you're opening like a booster deck. Like, it goes like, it'll like drop out all of it and it becomes really faint, and then it'll bring in the synthesizer and all of a sudden you're hearing the melody way more. It's also quite rhythmically complex. Like, it's in a really odd time signature, so like, you don't like, it's hard to like really get stuck into it and then get too familiar with it. Like, it kind of keeps itself fresh really well. The game rules. It's I love that it's really accessible. I love that so many people are playing it. It's so fun.
I want to play that game real bad.
I've
got it downloaded, but I haven't started it yet. But now that I'm done with Final Fantasy, I can actually properly start playing that game. It seems real cool. I saw someone on Twitter describe it as the biggest time thief since Vampire Survivors, which made me like,
that's a good sell.
It made me like double take. I was like, ooh, okay, all right, I'm gonna give that a go.
It's also pretty, it's because it is roguelikey, it's very easy to pick up and put down, which then makes me want to suggest that people, if they do get it and they are interested in being like, oh, I'll just play around, if they're prone to that sort of gameplay, then try and get it. If you've got a Steam Deck, then get it for Steam. If you've got a... I think it's out on Switch. grab it for Switch. I imagine it won't run poorly there. Oh, that's and the final thing.
One of the final reasons
why this game goes so hard, because I mentioned the score. You start out, the very first score you need to beat is 300. The final boss of like anti eight, which is like group eight of rounds, it can be as high as 300,000. And the effects, and then you could go into endless mode, and this game starts calculating its numbers at some point with ease. When like in scientific notation where I don't even know what it means, e to the power of whatever, like the numbers can get that big.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And it can in endless mode, it will demand those numbers of you if your build's good enough. But the best part of getting a run that really sings and really soars is seeing the way the game calculates the score, because it gives you every activation of everything that's contributing to your score. And it's like you played two tens and two fours. It'll be like, here's your 10 chips for your 10, and then 10 for your 10, and then 4 for your 4, and 4 for your 4, and here's the multiplier from your Joker, and here's the multiplier from your other Joker. Here's your re-trigger, and it's hitting your 10, and your 10, and your 4, and your 4, and it's hitting that Joker again, and that one, and that one, and that one, and that one. And the sound effects going, boom, 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 boom. It's really good. Very similar, like, if we're talking, like, simple yet very effective game feel to opening a chest in Vampire Survivors, right? Where it's like, oh, they just nailed this. Like, it is just pure, simple
dopamine,
harmless dopamine. Mm. It's not because I gave them $20, it's just because, like, number go up.
I was just on that real quick. I was looking at the there's a handful of things that you can buy with the Steam credits thing that you get for just purchasing and playing games on the Steam store, and there's a
you
bunch
mean like
of
the cosmetic stuff, right?
Yeah. It's like different avatar borders and stuff like that and backgrounds. There's a bunch of stuff you can buy, which is Steam Deck intro videos that like boot up sequence videos. And one of them is they've like licensed in whatever way they do the Vampire Survivors chest opening animation, but they've themed it to like the Steam Deck booting up. So if you just want like a shot of dopamine straight into the arm every time you load up your Steam Deck, you can put that on your console, and it'll happen every time, which is really, really funny.
If only they could license the Vita. Remember the like pull from the corner peel thing?
Yeah, the little like
Steam Deck.
Open the package thing. Yes. Even further tangent, when that console first came out, you couldn't skip the intro, and as a joke someone loaded up the entire like movie of Shrek as their at their thing, but they thought it was really funny once, but then they had to wait 2.5 hours for their console to boot up before they could go in and then change the setting to turn it off, which is
but also make sure they charged it so it didn't die halfway through.
way funnier as well. So good.
I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed.
Yeah. Cool. Is there more for Balatro for you to talk about, Kerry, or is that just kind
That's
of
it
like...
for me for now? A lovely podcast game as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to have another one of those. It's been a while for me. Aside from the open world sections of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, but it's wonderful. It's $20 Australian on Steam.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful. If anything I said just then sounded interesting, at least try the demo. I think the demo is still up.
I
will confirm that.
I was thinking as you were describing part of it, and like it sort of like reminded me a little bit of Marvel Snap in the way of like the parallax and the foil cards and stuff.
Mm.
And it's funny that Balatro has had the idea to actually like include scientific notation for its numbers that get that large, because there was a couple of ways that you could get Marvel Snap to go up that high, and it didn't account for that. So the numbers would just get like wider than the screen. And like you know, at that point you just knew that like you had won that thing, and it was very, very like a lot of stars had to align for that to actually happen. However, when it did happen, people would take screenshots, and yeah, the numbers would just be wider than the actual game would allow, which was always funny.
So there's looks like there's no demo playable on Steam at the moment, unfortunately. But if you have PS Plus Plus Plus, there's an hour trial there.
Nice.
And it's funny you say that, Jeremy, about how how Marvel Snap didn't account for that. Literally on the Steam page, it says break the game.
Yeah. Marvel Snap had to include a way of skipping, like the in the order of operations, there's ways to actually have an infinite like loop of things happening. And it would cause it was actually quite easy to do, and it would cause people to just rage quit because they would just get stuck and the game wouldn't end. They had to patch in a way which caused like a fast forward feature to occur to then just give you the end of that turn because you would never actually get it. So like like opposite goals there.
Yeah, totally.
Hey, if OG WoW taught us anything, it's that stun locking is a valid strategy in PvP.
Yes, yes. cool. So, Jam, you've been playing some Star Wars. What Star Wars have you been playing?
Some old Star Wars and new Star Wars. Uh-huh. I reviewed the Star Wars Dark Forces remaster for Kotaku Australia. And it's great. Dark Forces is one of those games where I didn't grow up with it, but yeah, I bought it on Steam when it was probably a 80 cents or something many, many years ago.
Yep, same.
I'm exactly the same position.
Yep.
Tried many times over the years to push through it and always liked it, but always got to like level 4 or 5. And that's sort of right where like the map starts getting more complex and you've really got to turn on that like 90s shooter brain. And that always clashed with like my wandering eye for just other games, other stuff in general. So I never finished it. And part of the reason I wanted to do the review was to damn well finish it. It's great. The remaster from Night Dive is fantastic. It's one of those things, like it's such a cliche to say, but it's like, it looks how you remember it looking.
Night Dive are really good. They are on such a roll at the moment.
They really are. Yeah. Not enough game publishers, studios, anything, do the work to maintain their own archive of any to maintain their own work to keep it like what's the word I'm looking for here?
Faithful?
Keep it playable. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've had some like really banger remasters lately. The Tomb Raider one before it was really fantastic as well. Metal Gear, we don't speak about too much.
What about that already?
Yeah. But yeah, it's the fact that clearly LucasArts had like really good record keeping from stuff back in the day too shows because they have all these like animatics and artworks and stuff that are viewable on the game.
Yeah.
Most amazingly of all, you can play an entire fully enclosed level that was only built for what's the Las Vegas Consumer Electronics Show. It was only built for like CES like 1994 or something. Wow. As a demo for that, and no one has played it since because it was never available since.
Yeah.
And it's in the game. And it's a great little level aboard a Star Destroyer.
That's amazing.
So yeah, it's really impressive. Yeah. That said, it still plays like a shooter from the mid-90s, which is fun for a nostalgic kind of kick, but also it means it's very, very obtuse and the difficulty is a bit all over the place. And $43.95 feels a bit steep.
Oh, yeah, it depends on how much you love Carl Catan.
Yeah, Carl Catan is amazing and wonderful, and we cherish him, and he is our favorite long-forgotten, neglected Star Wars man. I'm sure he'll show up at the end of, like, the Mandalorian and Grogu movie or something. Like, Dave Filoni will have him in his back pocket somewhere.
I hope not, only because I actually just want them to turn the Timothy Olyphant character from Mandalorian into him, because it's like it would be such a good fit. Whatever his name was, the sheriff from Mando season 2.
The sheriff, yeah.
I want.
No, but they have to turn him into Dash Render.
Oh my god, that's a name I haven't thought about in a while as well. Yeah, right.
That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's excellent, and I really hope they get to do Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight, because that had all the fun, wildly weird live action FMV in it, which is so great to look up on YouTube.
That was the one that was more akin to like Half-Life, right? That moved into like a
bit further away
from like the Doom side of FPS and more towards the fully 3D side.
It was still sprites, but you had a lightsaber and stuff in it, and it got a bit more.
Dark Forces 2 had some third person in it, didn't it?
No, that was Star Wars Dark Forces 3, Jedi Knight 2, Jedi... What was it called?
Academy?
Not Jedi, Jedi Outcast?
Oh, so, hang on.
Quake 3 engine one? The first of the
I've opened up Star Wars Jedi Knight collection on Steam. So it seems to go like this. Star Wars Dark Forces, Star Wars Jedi Knight : Dark Forces 2, Star Wars Jedi Knight Mysteries of the Sith, which I think was maybe multiplayer.
Right.
Star Wars Jedi Knight 2 Jedi Outcast. And then the Star Wars Jedi Knight Jedi Academy, which I think came before Jedi Outcast.
No, that was after.
It was after? Academy was... Oh, weird.
Because Academy let you like build a custom Jedi or whatever from memory.
Okay.
Because you were like Catan students or something. I have not played that demo in 20 years.
Yeah. The Settlers of Catan, as they were called.
Yes. Yes.
Looking at the Steam page, though, yes, Dark Forces, was third person. It was like 3D models. It's sort of old school environments, but a bit more Half-Life than Doom.
Bizarre.
So long ago.
It's a good sign. I hope they get to do the rest.
Yeah.
How long did Dark Forces take you, the remaster?
Probably about 8 or 9 hours. I got through most of it in like one or two sittings. Like the great thing about going back to an obtuse 90s game, even like a remake of it, is that there are a million fantastic guides out there. So it's pretty hard to like truly get stuck. A couple of times I just had to look it up because I was like, is this really how this is meant to work? Okay, yeah. But yeah.
Faithfully recreated.
Yeah.
Would you recommend it to people that have no experience in this like chunk of the Star Wars history of video games?
Yeah, actually, probably if you're interested in like video game history or shooter history or Star Wars history, I think on any of those fronts, it's a really interesting game because it still plays quite well. Like the map design, even though it's very, very lo-fi, it's really impressive how they did like the architecture of like secret Imperial bases and stuff. It's cool. There's some fantastic, fantastic like compressed riffs on John Williams tunes and I like it a lot. It's also, I said this in my review as well, but it's really refreshing in this day and age where everyone with a piece of IP tries to jigsaw every movie, TV show, comic, video game into lore cohesively.
Yep.
Especially Star Wars recently.
Oh yeah. This game did not give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, you steal the Death Star plans in the opening level. And even that at the time is like, I think, not really canon because, you know, he wasn't the many boffins or whatever. Well, that's, you know, disregarded now anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, spoilers, like, it's set between A New Hope and Empire, and you murder Boba Fett in it.
Cool.
Because it's cool
that's
to do so.
That's so good.
Yeah. It's just a boss fight. It makes no sense. And it's gloriously fantastic that it doesn't. It doesn't try to. It's just like what is cool for a video game.
It took the Force Awaken, Force Unleashed DLC approach of just like, we're just going to like throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and just like see what's cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, the other Star Wars thing I've been playing was Star Wars Unlimited, which is the new Magic the Gathering kind of card game, which is probably my favorite tabletop game in many years.
Cool.
It's really fantastic. I did not expect that, but it's really fantastic.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. What has brought it over the top for you? Why does it sit so high on the list?
It's just phenomenally well designed and very, very snappy to play. It's weird. So I got sent my review stuff, and then I also had a friend invite me along to go to a pre-release event a couple of weeks ago where they gave us, you know, sealed play. We tore boosters and then assembled decks out of them. And played on the night. And then a few days later, again, going back to Alice Clark, I went around to her place and taught her how to play it. And as I explained the rules, she was like, this sounds terrible. And then after a couple of turns, she was like, oh no, this is good. It just clicks. Yeah, if you played Magic, it's very, very similar in that it's like the base version is a 1v1. You've got your deck. It's like there's color themes in the same kind of way. The real differences are that you're not trying to like... I guess you are. You're trying to wear down the enemy's base, and a base is like... The standard is 30 health hit points. Some of them are 25 and they have a unique ability. You also kind of like commander format of Magic. You have a leader card, which is most of the game is face, like it's a double-sided card. It's faced one way, like sideways.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a passive ability, a unique passive ability. And these leaders are all like Emperor Palpatine, Darth Vader, Kanan Jarrus, Luke Skywalker, that kind of stuff. Yeah, and then instead of the creature deployment field of your soldiers or whatever being one area, it's actually two. There's the ground and there's space. And units can't attack space units, and space units can't attack ground units. There's probably some specific cards that say they can, but all of them can attack. Yeah, but all of them can attack the enemy base.
Yeah.
And even just, it's basically the only real differences from Magic are that, and the fact that there's no like mana, like land cards. You just play any card in your hand face down, and it becomes mana.
Yeah.
Once per turn. And it's really interesting. I guess the way turns work are a bit weird too, where there's a thing called the initiative token, and at the start of the game, you just flip to see who holds it. But a turn isn't like a I do an action, you do an action. It's actually like we keep going back and forth until we run out of things to do, and then whoever has run out of things to do first or just wants to says, I claim the initiative, takes the token. They can't do anything else until the other player also says they're done. And a lot of cards are much more powerful if you hold the initiative token. So that makes it, there's a really interesting strategic element there of like, well, I might damn myself to be defenseless or not be able to do anything for like a couple of rounds of whatever.
Yeah.
But I'll be much more powerful and go first next turn.
Yes.
And they're just really simple ideas that are really interesting. And a lot of the cards synergize in really interesting ways. The first game I played in the pre-release, my deck was an Emperor Palpatine deck. And the base card I had a weird ability where any card of like up to like mana value 6, I could play for free, like once per game. It's like an epic action, you can do it once per game. And that bounced off another card that was like an Admiral something. It was an Admiral, you know, background character who had 2 lines and then buy strikes back, whatever. He probably had 17 action figures. And he had another power that synergized off 6 cost or higher cards. So my enemy had Cassian Andor as his leader, and finally got like the cards aligned so he could put him into the battlefield and play him.
Yeah.
And then I instantly summoned an AT-AT using those 2 card synergies and went, okay, Cassian takes like 10 damage and is dead. Which just felt fantastic. Even my opponent was just like, well, that feels on brand.
Cassian gets stepped on.
Yeah, and then I got to turn my Palpatine over on the next turn, and his ability when he enters the battlefield is he can just basically turn an enemy soldier to the dark side. So he had a big, like, geared up Jedi Knight character, and then she went, okay, he's mine now.
Yeah, yeah.
And after losing for like 4 or 5 rounds, it just suddenly on a dime went to, well, I win because you can't do me any, you can't do anything to me now, and I'm about to hit you for like 12 damage next turn.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, yeah, it feels, I said this in my review for GameStop as well, it feels like a good game of Star Wars Battlefront does, where mm-hmm. you've got like heroes doing powerful, epic stuff here and there with just like soldiers and ships fighting and dying and crashing all around them. And it's very, very cool. And it's kind of quick. Once you get the rules down, the back and forth, you could play a game in 20 minutes.
Yeah, nice.
Unlike a game of Magic, which could take ages. Mm. And there's rules for supporting more than 2 players as well on the internet for free. And yeah, I've just been really, really impressed by it. Even sensible stuff too, like Fantasy Flight Games are putting this out. They know they're not going to dethrone Magic the Gathering, yeah. So they're not trying. Mm. They're putting seasonal new updates out every 4 months. they're not going to do it like monthly like Magic does. They don't see the point in trying to flood the market. It's all just like, yeah, I'm really impressed by it, which is worrying my bank account.
As someone who has stayed sort of surface level on any of the sort of tabletop card games of, well, most tabletop card games, but you know, I've played a little bit of Magic here and there, but not too much. This sounds like a very refreshing take on all of these things that, like, you know, like I'm still wrapping my head around how they've turned just basic turn mechanics into like a really strong layer of strategy that you need to consider. That's very impressive.
Yeah, it's all very elegantly designed. And honestly, what I explained very badly just then is pretty much the rules. Like, that's pretty much it. Everything else is just on the cards individually. The color aspect thing, like with Magic, you're very, because you have like lands to power your cards, you kind of need to stay on one or two color aspects or you're never going to get enough mana to play things. With this, your color aspects are meant to go off what your leader and your base are, but it also allows you to just pick cards that are completely off your color aspect. It just makes you pay extra like mana, like resource cost for them. And even that opens up wild strategies. And the fact that your cards in your deck, any card can just be a resource card, you can put totally off-color cards in it. And if the situation arises where you can play them, great. If not, you can just burn them as resources, as mana. It's just so much more flexible, which once there's probably like 5 or 6 seasons of cards out, it's probably going to be a cheesy deck building nightmare for like tournament play and stuff, but they'll cross that bridge when they come to it, I'm sure.
Do you have much experience with that what was it called? It was just Star Wars the card game was what it was called. It was a different fantasy
from
2012 onwards.
Well, that's the other funny thing too, is that the one thing that makes me a bit nervous is Fantasy Flight have done a lot of card games.
They have.
Deck builders.
As I was trying to remember the name of it, I looked at their Wikipedia page and I was like, oh, there's like a lot of Star Wars ones here even.
Yeah. They've had the Star Wars license for quite a few years and that gives me hope that they'll hang on so we can keep this going.
Yeah.
But they put out a lot of licensed games that had the license stashed away very suddenly and they disappeared. One of my favorite games ever was the Battlestar Galactica board game, and that's been out of print for about 12 years. And I really want the last two expansions, but I'm not paying $500 or $600 for them each on eBay.
Yeah.
And they are that expensive.
Yes.
They had a fantastic Warhammer and Warhammer 40K deck builder, and then Games Workshop went, no, we don't like what we're doing with it, and it just died overnight. They did a Game of Thrones deck builder, which was meant to have been great, and that's just been dormant with no word whatsoever since 2019.
Yeah, right.
The track record is pretty spotty with IP. They put an XCOM board game out. They put a Doom board game out. They're long out of print.
And it's so difficult, especially with IP, that they just have no control over as companies buy other companies and sell other companies and close other companies.
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy for something to just get, like, actually, like, we can't even give you the thumbs up to work on this anymore. So, like, stop.
Yeah.
But
so here's hoping, because it's very promising.
Cool. Is it like, I think like the, what's the entry price? Is it like?
I'm not too sure. This is the pre-release box. There is a starter set as well. The first season is called Spark of Rebellion. So that's the 2-player starter set. And it comes with like a Vader deck and a Luke Skywalker deck.
I think I'm looking at that here. It retails for $60, it looks like.
Okay.
And still on pre-order at Gameology, but.
Okay. That's a little steep for a starter set. I think smartly, that should be something that's sort of probably sold at a loss, I think. Like $25 bucks is what the starter sets for Magic the Gathering go for, and that's a easier pitch. But it's really good, and I kind of feel like it's a lot more accessible than Magic in a lot of ways. And, like, I taught Alice it, and she's known into Star Wars, and she really liked it as a game. So there's that, too.
Yeah, nice.
Yep. Yep. Awesome.
Yeah. Should they?
That's great.
Should they put it on phones?
Well, that's a thing, too. Like, it would be absolute crack as a digital version.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens there as well.
It's so hard for, like, and this is ridiculous, because I used to spend, like, a month, like, I used to just buy every Marvel Snap season pass for, like, let's say 4 or 5 seasons, which was a monthly thing at that point. I would go so hard into like Star Wars good card game on the phone, But if for some reason just the barrier for physical card games, I think just because I need to actually then go out and play against people in the real world just makes it not as like accessible for me.
Yeah,
I would buy
you can play these games quite well over like a video call though as well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not even actually.
It's a bit fiddly putting a camera like down on something, but it tends to work pretty well.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
but also the fact that this is lightweight as well, like you could throw a couple of decks in a deck box and, you know, keep it in a bag and play over a lunch break or
yeah.
Like
yeah.
And it's pretty easy to teach. That's a plus as well.
Cool.
There's a lot of pluses going for that in my book. I might have to check that out.
Yeah, it's worrying, hey.
Yeah. You mentioned something in your discussion there, Jam, that I wanted to pick up on for both of you. Have either of you heard of, seen much of, are excited by much of the remastered Battlefront collection that's coming out soon?
I didn't know it was a thing until I saw it listed like a week ago, but anyway, yeah, I was really talking about it.
I think they announced it at the that Nintendo partner direct they had a week or two ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
But it's coming out on more than just Nintendo. They just announced it there.
Yeah.
I was excited for the concept of just like full lobbies in more areas of playing it.
And like proper resolution scaling on PC and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it going to have crossplay though? That's the big thing.
Well, let me look.
There was a thing that I need to confirm.
There was something I saw about the collection that I also wanted to bring up.
Yes. Is it the servers?
No, mine's about a mod.
Oh, okay. This is just like a lot of this is like, you know, I think people, as they often do, the gamers are upset. However, I've seen people online saying that they actually are unable to get into games because they have 10,000 people playing on launch night. And I have unconfirmed reports, which just means I've read a tweet that says there's about 3 servers available. Like,
oh no,
like game lobbies.
So what, you could have like 200 people max?
Yes, like that is exactly the number.
It's only, you can only play on dedicated servers, and they did not expect anyone to care about this re-release.
Yes, and thing. There's also like no parting up with friends.
Oh no.
Like there's a lot of
there is a lack of crossplay. It has it's got like
you can't do multiplayer unless you're doing so those servers are the only place to play at the moment, which, you know, the entire reason Battlefront retook off a little while ago when they brought it back out again was they took out GameSpy and started like people could set up their own servers and they put up a server browser.
I feel like that's something they'll have to concede on, surely.
Yeah.
If they don't do it fast enough, though, this game's dead in the water.
But do like, they care?
That's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing.
Like, and can you still buy the non-remastered version? Like, did they delist that? And,
oh, I don't know.
Yeah, like, is this one of those BioShock things where, like, they've replaced the SKU for anyone who also owned the previous one to play this one now? Like, is it one of those things?
I hate
things?
It when they do that.
Yeah.
No, it is not one of those things.
Good, good, good. That is good.
Battlefront 2 is still available on Steam. The collection... It came out today, apparently. Yes, it has 1,200 reviews. 21% of them are positive, which is atrocious. The thing I heard, it was a story I read on IGN, because people had sort of figured this out on Reddit from the modding community, but they included in this release characters that were only available as downloadable content on the Xbox version of Battlefront 2, which was Asajj Ventress and someone else.
Kit Fisto, I think, was the other one.
Right.
Wow, what an odd choice.
Yeah.
But the thing with the
Xbox exclusive Kit Fisto is a sentence that will live in my head.
Yeah, like, just like, like, get us the green guy.
something that was unique to the way that it was implemented on Xbox is Ventress had unique animations that none of the other heroes had.
Yeah.
And
she had two lightsabers.
Yes, exactly. And like the way she held them, I think, was different. Might have even had different attacks. They've brought Kit Fisto and Asajj into this classic collection that is available on all of the platforms, but it looks like they've done it using a mod that someone made for the PC version of the game, and you can tell because Asajj doesn't have the unique animations for her character.
Oh,
it's no. it's just a reskin of whatever was available in that version of the game, because that's all the modder could use. And so this version that's included these DLC exclusive characters ostensibly is using this work that someone else did from the community in the last, it was fairly recent, the last 3 or 5 years. It's just like, oh, it's not,
I guess it's entirely possible they don't have the source code or anything anymore either for that version, or it's who knows
right.
where these things go.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And more. Even if they didn't like rip the mod out, they might have just like been like, oh, there's a mod. Oh, this is how they've done it. And then maybe they just did that again.
Yeah. Like you know, the character model was probably in the code of like the PC version stuff anyway. And just, yeah.
So yeah, it's sticky. It's a shame it's not off to a flying start here.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's also $52.
Yikes.
and also, Australian. Really, who's playing the first one? Like, let's be real.
Yeah, I know. Oh. Yeah. It's like getting the Team Fortress collection before TF2 was free. It's like, okay, but I'm here to play TF2.
Wow. So that feels like quite a Star Wars trilogy in itself. We had a good Star Wars, a great Star Wars, and then oh dear Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's still Aspyr, who are apparently still making that game. Still making thingo.
What, the Knights of the Old Republic remake?
Yeah, the latest word is that it's not actually dead, but there's just a very...
Wasn't it that Aspyr isn't working on it, but their parent company Saber is, or they've got another team working on it? Like, I think Aspyr's not.
Lost track.
I remember reading something that the game wasn't dead, and whoever was still working on it, there was like a skeleton crew that was still going, but yeah. That's a shame.
Well, it sounds like you should spend your time more with Dark Forces Remastered than you should with Battlefront Collection.
Yes, yes. Cool, awesome. Well, I think that does bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jan. This has been an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. This was great fun.
Yeah. And welcome back, Kerry.
Thanks. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
On the thing that I own. and thank you, listeners, for listening to the show. Before I get into the outro, Jam, where can they follow you? Where can we see more of your stuff? What do you got cooking? Anything you want to plug?
That address down with angles, that they're right there. Uh-huh. Right there.
Yep.
There. That's where all the things tend to go, for better or worse. Mostly for worse, because it's that place.
At JamWA. Yeah.
Yes, at JamWA. Which, funnily enough, was a name that came out of a Star Wars name generator on the internet when I was a high schooler.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Look at my name. I'm Obi-Wan Jizz.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, from that generator, you'd be Gerbra.
Yeah, that wasn't... This wasn't from Star Wars name generator. This was just from... I wanted a Neo
Your
Pets
brain.
Account.
Sure. Kapa sounds very Klingon, and that's kind of cool.
I didn't have a Star Wars username, but I had Star Wars... I had, like, Jedi in my first email address.
Yeah, nice.
Nice.
Is that what the J stands for?
No.
Kerry Jedi Palmer.
I wish.
We started like a GoFundMe for like legal name change.
Yeah. sorry, you were gonna say your plugs.
Oh yes, no, that's really it. I might get an award next week, but I won't, because there's more talented people like Alice Clark that I'm competing with.
Oh, don't sell yourself short. You are nominated. You have a good a chance as anyone to be an award winning.
It is indeed an honor just to be nominated.
Uh-huh. Hey, you get that free Lizzie's ticket, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll have some articles coming up on, oh my god, what is next? Kotaku and Games Hub. Soon, Kotaku Australia, and then hopefully more stuff soon beyond that. Excellent. But we'll see, because freelance life.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, go check out those when they come out. Once again, thank you so much for coming on the show, Jam. It's been so good to have you on.
Thank you.
That does bring us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to check out next week, not next week, the next episode in 2 weeks. The best way to make sure you don't miss it is to follow all of our social media accounts at MiniMapAU. You can also head to minimap.com.au for absolutely everything else Minimap related, including the Minidisc podcast and articles and other stuff that we're doing as well. For those of you, I'm going to skip that part. We're live next in 2 weeks on Twitch. If you want to come join the show live, I was going to say for those of you, but there is no one in the chat because I'm not live. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you give us some of those oh-so-tasty 5-star ratings. It helps us out a lot, and also consider joining us for the live show. Lastly, you can also support us on Patreon. If you want to help keep the lights and mics on, you can do that by heading on over to patreon.com/minimapAU. And for $5 Australian, you can know that you are indeed supporting the show, and you will also gain access to some of our special bonus features. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Kerry, for coming back. Thank you, Jam, for being on the show. And thank you, listeners. I forgot to hit the
There is button. Indeed no one in the chat.
There is indeed no one in the chat. All right. Bye, everybody.